Hi, Allison.
Hi, Monique. So good to see you again.
So good to see you. Really glad to be together, and I'm looking forward to this conversation. I have read your new book. Love the title, I Shouldn't Feel This Way. Such a great title. I think so many of us say that in our head all the time. For you to give that a title, okay, I have to read this book. Maybe we could just start right there. Why did you name it, I Shouldn't Feel This Way?
Yeah, I realized in my own life, just as you said, that is the ubiquitous refrain that runs through my mind. And I've learned to take that feeling of, oh, I shouldn't feel this way, whether it's a sort of self-condemnation or guilting myself or trying to manipulate myself, whatever it is at the root of that, and turn it into a cue. Oh, whenever I feel that way, I actually need to pay attention to what I feel. And so I shouldn't feel this way has become for me a little bit of a, oh, I feel something. I feel something I don't want to feel. And that helps me pivot to getting curious instead of beating myself up. So I've flipped that to become a sign for me because it's just so ubiquitous in my life. You know, I think about it all the time, that refrain in my head, I shouldn't feel this way. I shouldn't feel this way. Pause. What is it that I don't want to feel?
I just love that. It is so automatic, which means, yeah, we've been trained. We've got that message somewhere that we shouldn't feel our feelings because they're scary, because they're uncomfortable, because they're wrong, because they're we don't have time for them or whatever. The idea that you said about sort of reframing it or letting it be a cue that something needs our attention. And I wanted you to explain, like, why can't we just brush it aside? Like, what happens if we just, I don't want to feel this, or I shouldn't feel this, and why should we pay attention to it?
Yeah, I think if when I think about our inner lives, right, the parts of our soul, the way emotions show up, so often we have different emotions simultaneously. And so we have the feeling, whatever the feeling is, anger, frustration, whatever the emotion is. And then that second emotion of, I shouldn't feel that, just ratchets up the tension, just adds to the chaos inside it. It adds, and there's literal research that it brings cortisol right in that it adds to the stress. And so that inner tension, I think of music, right? It creates a discordant tone, a melody, two notes clashing together, the original emotion and then the self-judgment or the self-berating. And that just ratchets it up so that we have less access to our creativity, to our wisdom, to that calm, clear state of what's really happening here, being in the present moment. Right? Being in that present moment, this mindfulness that is so well researched and so elusive for so many of us of just this is what is right now, no judgment. And that is the place from which we can make wise on behalf of our emotions. But when we're beating ourselves up for those emotions, we're just creating more noise and more tension and more chaos inside. And so this has really been a personal journey for me of slowly untangling the knots of those different feelings and giving myself permission to go, what is happening right now? Yes, I don't want to feel it. I do. And as I face that, I have developed the ability to move through really hard things. I often say to people, it's a slower way to get to where you want to be faster because you actually slow yourself down. And you're able to engage all of reality, all of what you feel, which actually leads you to better, wiser, braver decision making in the face of complicated challenges.
I think, like with all of us, we go through this all day long, these kinds of
Yes.
emotions coming up and presenting themselves. Whether I'm going to deal with it or just brush it off, numb it out. And when I was reading, I was practicing, have it laid out, and then you have like a practical, easy way to sort of address it. And what I found was it was like you were giving me permission to do something with it, and I found it soothing, actually.
I'm so glad. I'm
Yes.
so glad.
Sometimes we might feel it's so overwhelming and we're not going to know how to deal with it. But what you're kind of saying is that when we're numbing it, we're not actually helping ourselves at all.
And
And
that was my,
yeah.
yeah. Yeah, that was my story. I thought I was very emotionally regulated, like in my 30s, but really what I was really good at doing is controlling my emotions in front of other people and then numbing them to where I could kind of get them away, to where I could show back up with other people and perform well. Yeah. And that's not actual intimacy. That's not actually honoring the vitality of emotions. It just so many of us, especially those of us raised, you know, 70s, 80s, 90s, before we really understood emotions, we barely understand emotions now. We just don't know. We didn't know what to do with them. We still don't know what to do with them. And so many of us are at the children's table still really learning, no, wait a minute. This is what I feel. I don't have to go act out of that feeling immediately. But there is a self-soothing quality to it, Monique. When you said that, that makes sense to me because this is what we try to teach our children.
Yes.
Yes, you can have that emotion. I'm with you in that emotion. That emotion is valid. We're not going to go punch your sister, you know, or do something, you know, out of that emotion, right? That's not okay. But you can have the feeling. You can have the feeling and be with yourself in the feeling. I'm here with you, right? And that's what we're learning to do for ourselves through this work.
I just love that. That's exactly what I found was happening. And yes, it is like we are children learning now about emotions, and it's okay. It's not too late for us to do this work. One of the big things that you introduced, which I really want to talk about and I loved, is this concept of naming. Let's name what's going on. And again, that has to do with what you said, because a lot of us will, because we're so used, it happens below awareness to kind of like push it away, numb it away. What we feel then is this kind of inner butterfly, restless anxiety.
Yes.
And when you said, let's gently look at it and name it again, I felt like a soothing.
Yes, there's something, you know, Dan Siegel has that incredible quote, naming is taming. And he talks about it in Mindset, the neurobiology of that, where we actually are having the emotion, you know, the amygdala is firing, but we're also bringing online another part of our brain that allows us to organize that emotion as we're having it. And both are really important. You're not bypassing the emotion, but as you name it, you're bringing a little bit of order to it. There's some what we call intrapsychic differentiation, right? Where you're differentiating from that emotion. It's there, you feel it, but you're also present to it from a more meaning-making part of your brain. And there's something just in that.
Absolutely.
Oh my gosh, I'm angry. You know, I'm sad. I wish I wasn't. You know, and for me, I always have to give myself permission. That part of me that doesn't want to feel that way is also valid. And of course, I don't want to be angry. I am. I need to take a look at that. That right there, those namings, just calm the nervous system. It's true. It's what is true. And I think about, you know, I know you and I share this faith orientation. I think about, is this what Jesus meant when he said the truth sets us free? We're telling ourselves the truth. This is the truth of what I feel. I don't yet maybe even understand why I feel all these things. I'm not even there. I'm just still inside myself. This is the truth about how I feel. I'm not gaslighting myself. You know, I'm not trying to dupe myself into not feeling what I really feel. And again, I'm not saying we should go act out of all of those feelings immediately, but the truth sets us free. This is it. And it's so liberating. You know, when you go, this is it. This is what I feel. Okay. That's the starting point.
Yeah. And that's what I found when I was, like I said, I was reading it and doing it as I was reading it. And I was feeling all of those things. So I love what you said about order, because that is what it felt like. Because when we have those emotions and we are not used to naming them, we're not used to containing them, we're not used to just being in them, it can feel scary and chaotic. So this is a way to order it so that it could feel more easy to manage, easy to be with, like you said. So I love that. I really do. And when you were talking about those of us that grew up, our parents, many of our come from families where emotions were not talked about at all. So yes, a lot of us are we're the production or whatever the word is of it. And we're learning now. Yeah.
And there's no shame in it.
No.
I love that you said that. I was just talking with somebody about this idea of emotional regulation. I said, man, I look back at myself throughout my 30s. I was like, I had a very, you know, for lack of a better word, immature, if we think about emotionally immature relationship to my emotions, because yes. if you don't learn it, how do you learn it? You know, you have to. And so there's just, and you know, if we add in the trauma overlay, there's, that's a whole thing mm-hmm. that makes it really hard.
Very hard.
So we have to be really gentle with yeah. ourselves through this process.
Yes. Yes. And I am looking at it as a trauma survivor. And I do know that being used to not naming or being in feelings because they feel, they remind the body of past experiences that felt really overwhelming. And so this process helped me to gain some more agency in my own body and over my own nervous system by naming it and seeing that by naming it, it's already, you know, relieved some of that anxious energy because I've named what's happening here and I've given myself permission. And with trauma, isn't that part of our healing journey? We weren't able to name, this is what sure. happened, this is what I felt. And now we have a chance as adults, as healing adults on the journey of healing, to begin to own and name those feelings without judgment.
I love that. That link to agency. Yeah. That link to, we were told, you know, if you're a trauma survivor, no doubt you were told those emotions, mm-hmm. those feelings that you have are not valid. I mean, talk about, you know, all the toxic messages yeah. that we receive across the board. And so that agency of, no, this is how I feel. Mm. Even, you know, I always bring God into it. This is how I always tell people, I use the comma God little exercise where it's like, this is what I feel, God, because also it allows me to bring it into my spiritual life. Because for me, that was a part of my story. I'm not allowed to have these emotions, right? These emotions are bad. And so for me, it's very empowering, not only to give myself permission, but to give myself permission before God. This is how I feel. This is it. I'm jealous, God. And I mean, it's just so freeing.
Yeah.
You know, I don't have to get myself out of that emotion to be at peace with myself or at peace with God. This is just what's real.
Yeah. I love that. I love this. It's, you know, we're all trying to shed all of that baggage and all of that stuff where we had to be a certain way. And we're trying to get back to authenticity and what we really feel and who we really are. And this is part of it. And it's not easy, but I do like the way that you make it tangible and manageable. You talked about naming tames numbing. Can you talk about that a bit?
Yeah, well, I look at numbing as the opposite of naming. And again, no shame with that. I have a whole chapter in the book on numbing because that's my go-to. And I'm a really good sort of pro-social number. You know, I know just enough to where it's not really like, you know, people can't say to me, oh, you have a problem with this or a problem with that, but it's not healthy, right? It doesn't lead to richer relationships with others and myself. And so I look at numbing in many ways as the opposite of naming. Numbing is to try to keep those emotions outside of our conscious awareness, just try to keep them down, just out to under the surface, right? Naming is bringing them up into the surface and looking at them, you know? And that can be scary, but naming leads us to freedom. It allows us to bring more of our thinking brain online to kind of partner with. I don't see this as hierarchical. It's not that our thinking brain controls our emotions. It's that they work together. Here's the emotion. Here's the thinking brain. And the two kind of together sort out what's really real, what needs to happen. Where did this painful emotion come from? I don't want to feel it. I do. There's a reason I feel it, right? And so when we numb, we're just trying. And again, there's no shame on this. I mean, I am a master at it. I write a lot about my own journey through this in that chapter, but it's just trying to trick ourselves a little bit, like just keep it down, just keep it down. I think a lot of us operate that way. You know, I don't know what to do with the emotions. So just keep them underneath the surface. And we don't get that freedom and that clarity that we need because those emotions are there for a reason.
Yeah. And I love that because again, like we had this, I think anyway, this kind of warped feeling that, I don't know, maybe there's something wrong with the machinery because we feel a certain way. We shouldn't feel it, numb it away. Yeah. But feelings are actually indicators that something needs our attention and something's going on. And I love throughout the book, you also would say things like holy this or holy that. And I was saying, yes, yes, it's holy because it's beautiful. It's truth making. It's truth defining. Yeah.
The holy curiosity I talk about, the holy curiosity, because holy, the root of it is wholeness, we're trying to become whole, right? And this, our emotions are a part of this process of becoming whole. So that holy curiosity is, what is the emotion about? I did some work, you know, in my own life. I realized that as a child, I would, and I tell this story in the book, you know, I have all these memories of sneaking into our basement. I wasn't allowed to drink pop. We called it pop, soda pop, Dr. Pepper. I could have one a week, but we had this big stash in our basement. And I would sneak down into the basement and steal them. Like once a day, I'd take them up in my bedroom, drink them, hide them. So I was a little like, you know, a little like soda addict. And I never understood until later on as an adult, when I realized there was a link between reaching for chips, reaching for whatever, and a painful emotion. And so in my own work, it was really, oh my gosh, something was going on. I was lonely. I was anxious. I was scared. I didn't just randomly go down into my basement.
You weren't thirsty.
Get that hit of Dr. Mm-hmm. Pepper then. And so in my own work of unpacking, oh, there was something going on there, you know, and that's helped me so much. Again, not to shame myself, but now as an adult, when I notice myself just kind of craving that hit of whatever, you know, whatever the dopamine hit is, going, just again, pausing instead of beating myself up. Oh, I shouldn't feel that way. I shouldn't want that, right? I shouldn't want that thing. Pausing and going, what's going on? Oh man, I'm tired, or I'm stuck in this work project, or I'm frustrated. That's what's really going on. And that hit of whatever the dopamine in is, isn't actually going to get me through that. I've got to go, it is frustrating. Okay. You know, kind of parent myself through those moments. Yeah,
that's what I was thinking. You said parenting. As you were talking, I'm like, she's talking like this kind of dream mother or caregiver that we would have that would say, hey, what's going on?
Exactly.
You know? Yeah.
Exactly. Not slapping you on the wrist for trying to reach for something you feel like you shouldn't be reaching for. Instead going, that's a cue.
Yeah.
What's going on? And that's that I shouldn't feel that way. I shouldn't feel like I want this. Well, I do.
Yeah.
What's that about?
Yeah. I just love that. Yeah. So numbing actually brings relief.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. In and of itself, there is a lot of relief. And even, I talk about the work of naming, start with yourself. I say, name what's hard, start with yourself, because it's always tempting to want to kind of name the thing outside of us. Well, they did that.
Yes.
Right. So start with yourself. What's the emotion? And then consider what's the external thing that triggered it. That's also important. You know, what mm-hmm. happened? That sort of investigative work. You know, when did I start feeling angry? What was the instigating event, right? And then there's a process of discernment about that, which is getting into framing. You know, what is it that happened? We have to put a little bit of discernment behind mm-hmm. that, so we don't jump to conclusions or assumptions that aren't actually grounded in reality either.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. It's interesting. As I was going through the book, I was saying to myself, I should put some of your little, because you have like little questions to ask or little phrases that are quite simple, but I'm like, I should put them on cue cards and have them, you know, so that they become more of a habit. You were saying something about, I think it's someone you dedicated the book to, that they were an expert namer. And I thought, that's good. Wouldn't that be great if we were expert namers?
Yeah, that's my husband from the moment we met. Yeah, and sometimes it's jarring. You know, I'm like, I don't know if I want that. You know, the number in me is like, I don't really want that
right.
name. He's a very curious person. So there's always a non-shaming way with it. But even, and I say this in the book, we start with ourselves, but as you get really good at kind of naming things, you bring out the good in other people. It brings tears to my eyes. When we first met, you know, he would say things to me like, I see this in you. And it was like, nobody had ever named that before. And I was like, oh my gosh. And that called that thing into being.
Oh, wow.
Right. When someone names something they see in us, it's like, I think that's true. I think that resonates, you know, but I've never had a name for it. So it's kind of just been operating under the surface. And suddenly when there's a name for it, oh, I can kind of live into that.
Yeah.
Right. So when we become namers, we become people who call out the truth in other people too, you know, and sometimes it's hard. Sometimes we got to name things that are hard. You know, I talk about that. We have to name hard things.
Yeah.
But sometimes we get to name the good that we see. And that is so freeing to other people.
I just love that. That's so beautiful. So am I missing anything else that you would like to, you know, talk about with regards to some of the themes in the book?
I think that the step that was so interesting for me to write about, it's a three steps. They're really not steps, they're practices. I really think these are three practices that all of us, of all my books, this is the one I think is more forward facing. You know, we've done some of the deeper healing work, and now we've got to just live out the day to day of being a human, right? And so these three practices, the naming, really paying attention to what we're noticing in ourselves and in our environment. The next step is the one I actually think might be the least understood, especially in our modern age, but it's really important. That's the framing. And the framing is where we do that work of reflecting on. So what I talk about in the book is a lot of us are tempted to name and then act. And we like the naming is really kind of, we get that hit of, oh, this feels good, right? Okay, let's go. Right. But there's this middle step. There's this middle step of really pausing. And that's what I call these places in between, to pause, that aren't as common in our fast-paced, you know, culture, right? To pause. And the pause can be as small as a deep breath. You know, you're with your kids and you notice anger, you're like, oh, I'm angry. And then there's a little play. I talk about just creating a little place in between, even if it's a deep breath, if it's a walk around the block, to kind of just notice, what's that about? What really happened there? What am I actually responding to? Am I angry because of something that someone did and I need to talk to them about it? Or am I angry because they actually didn't do anything wrong and I'm triggered because of something in my own life? Right? That framing really is important. Mm-hmm. And so I talk a lot in that chapter about giving yourself, again, I know people are busy. I know we live busy lives, but trying to find these places in between each day to reflect, what am I feeling? What am I thinking? You know, that holy curiosity, getting curious, minding your mind. For me, it's taking a walk. You know, it's just, what have I been thinking about today? How am I beating myself up inevitably? You know, what's that message? Oh, you know, I just noticed it this morning. You know, I just have this voice in my head that, oh, you're so stupid, usually is the voice in my head. And so when I create those daily practices of going, there is that voice. Okay, deep breath. You know, I'm minding my mind. And that's where I get a lot of clarity and a lot, because again, I'm calming the limbic firing, I'm calming the nervous system. And then I'm more able to do the things I need to do, which is that third step, which is braving, taking action. And so the whole kind of all three practices are important. There's the naming, there's the awareness, there's the framing, there's reflecting, kind of that pause. And then there's the, okay, what do I need to do here? Do I need to have a hard conversation with someone? Do I need to care for myself? Because I'm actually just overwhelmed and I got really angry and that person didn't actually do anything wrong, right? What is the actual thing that I need to do? And so it's really just this process, these practices of becoming a wiser human.
I love that. And that's why I said I need the cue card, because I think I was like forgetting the second one, which is the framing, which is really, really important. I think that I'm so glad you wrote this book, because like you said, you know, there's some deeper work, but this is some essential 101 that we really need that can be helpful for us in our day to day, moment to moment, emotional life.
Yeah. Yes. I really did write it. I always try to add a trauma-informed, like, listen, if you've got a backlog, you're going to need to really be gentle. All that pacing and containment, that safety that you need to be safe with your emotions is so crucial. Mm-hmm. Right. But as you grow and as you know, as you're able to, these are practices that you implement in your day every day that kind of keep you going, keep you moving on a path of self-awareness, of God awareness, mm-hmm. of being in the present moment, mm-hmm. of understanding kind of all the things that are coming at you that allow you to have that healthy relationship with your emotions that make you a whole person. You know, sometimes, man, the other day, you know, it was like I was aware of sadness. And again, in the past, I would have just tried to get that away. And now it's like, oh, I need to honor that sadness. And when I honor sadness, a little bit of sadness, it keeps it from overwhelming me and taking me out, Right. When I create those places in between to go, oh, that is that. And again, that parenting of myself, that daily practice that keeps me really vital and alive and whole and from getting knocked off by my emotions in a bigger way.
I really, really like that. Yeah, that's so good. And again, I feel and I hear the soothing part that happens. But yeah, it's definitely a practice, because I'll admit, as I was reading, I was like, oh yeah, this is so good. And 5 minutes later, I completely forgot and was, you know, into. So it's an intentional, yeah, it's like when you're learning something new. If you're so used to numbing, if you're so used to, it's going to take some practice and some intention. And yeah.
I use the metaphor in the last chapter of the book of learning to ride a bike. And if you think back to childhood, for me, learning to ride a bike was so hard. It took me forever. I was so scared. I got a black eye. I fell. You know, it was traumatic, you know. But when I finally kind of just started to do it, and I remember, you know, my dad finally let go, and I was like, okay, I'm kind of. And if you think about riding the bike, it does require quite a bit of your kind of balancing, you know, your arm movements with your leg movements, with your visual acuity, you know, there's a whole body coordination effort that's going on to riding that bike, but it feels so great when you're doing it. It's so fun. You know, it's like, I'm doing it, right? And it becomes more intuitive. And that's what a lot of this, in my mind, so many of us, again, that had that deficit of learning our emotions, learning to manage them, learning to regulate, it's a whole body operation. When we start to understand our nervous system, we start to understand kind of our thoughts, we start to understand our emotions, we bring it all together, and then we're riding the bike, you know, of our lives. And it's not just
an analogy,
right? We might hit some potholes, or we see some potholes, but we learn how to steer clear of them, because we kind of know how to maneuver the vessel, the vehicle that God has given us, you know. Or we see the curve coming up, so we slow down, right? We take command of this being, this whole being that God has designed in us. And that's the goal, right? And we're going to tumble sometimes. And sometimes we're just going to want to be like, I don't want to ride the bike today. And that's okay. But that's what I'm trying to equip people to do is, man, you've got this sophisticated, beautiful instrument that God gave you, and your emotions are part of it. And learning to use that instrument is heal it and nurture it. And then just ride that bike, you know, is really a beautiful part, I think, of being a human on this planet.
Absolutely. I'm thinking about something I read on one of the pages where you said maybe my body is tired or very tired. And it says, ask yourself what you need. And again, I realized, like, when I read that, wow, like giving your body, if your body is giving you cues that it's exhausted and you're honoring it and you're saying, okay, you're really tired. Maybe, what do you need? I need to lie down. And you do that. That's just so honoring. So I love that. Yeah, this was a great conversation. So the book is coming out when?
It comes out May 7th. And if you pre-order, you get the first three chapters. I've got some bonus classes for material that didn't make it into the book. I'm so excited about it. I sort of just have this vision, you know, of so many, especially women, but men too, just learning this, you know. I talk about befriending these emotions and bringing them into our whole experience of life. And again, at the front end, it can feel like, not, you know, like, I don't know if I want to be letting these emotions, or they're big emotions. And again, whether it's a backlog, it's really wise to do that with a trained professional to help you pace yourself. Mm. Those emotions will learn to trust you.
Oh.
And trust that you're not going to do what was done in the past. You're not going to sideline them, right? And you develop that mutually trusting relationship with your emotions and partnership with God. And it's just a really beautiful way to go through life. You kind of stop fearing, you know, those feelings, and trust that they're there for a reason, and that you're going to have what you need to get through them and to even parent them in such a beautiful, nurturing way.
That's so great. So a great book. Looking forward to diving in again and learning some of these practices. So thank you for this conversation.
Thanks so much for having me, Monique. It's always a pleasure.